Hebrews chapter 12, and we'll just read the first three verses again together. These are the verses we're going to look at tonight. Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 3. We read, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." There was an advertisement ran in many New York City newspapers, and the advert was this. It invited all who wanted to leave Earth and move to another planet to submit an application to those newspapers. Within a matter of days, not even a week, there were over 18,000 applications submitted. Now, these applications to the various newspapers, they were given to a panel of psychologists to review the reasons as to why people wanted to leave planet Earth and move to another planet. And their conclusion was simply this, that the vast majority of those who applied and wanted to start a new life on another planet, they applied because they were so discouraged by life on this planet. Discouragement. Discouragement, I'm sure, is a disease that you have suffered from at some stage of your Christian experience. You see, it is easy for the pressures of planet Earth to drive you to despair. I am encouraged tonight because even some of God's choicest saints have been plagued by the terrible disease of discouragement. John Calvin, for example, on one occasion said, "In addition to the immense troubles by which I am sorely consumed, there is almost no day on which some new pain or anxiety does not come upon me." C.H. Spurgeon said, "Discouragement creeps over my heart and makes me go with heaviness to my work. It is dreadfully weakening." Indeed, in the Bible, there were many individuals who were deeply discouraged. Moses, for example, when he was leading the children of Israel through the wilderness, he became discouraged often and frustrated at leading the people of God. David, the sweet psalmist of Israel, he entered a cave of discouragement in the cave of Adullam. On another occasion in Psalm 55, during the rebellion of his son Absalom, and also the treachery of his advisor Ahithophel, he said in Psalm 55, verse 6, "I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, for then would I fly away and be at rest." And he became so discouraged with what others were doing to him, even his own son and his trusted advisor Ahithophel, that he said that it would be better if he had wings, wings like a bird, that he could leave planet Earth and enter into another planet. And here in the book of Hebrews, you're met by a group of believers who it seems were very discouraged in the race of the Christian life. We can deduce this because in verse 3, Paul encourages them and he states that he encouraged them, "lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." Now these verses, verses 1 through 3, they are full and they are complete with imagery taken from the arena of athletics. And that phrase, "lest ye be wearied and faint in your mind," it draws in your mind's eye the picture in the original of a runner, and that runner is in the race. However, that runner, they have collapsed, they have stopped during the race because of the difficulty of that race. And Paul, he takes that imagery, the imagery of the runner collapsing in the midst of the race, and he applies it to these believers who were under pressure. And it seems that these believers, they were in danger. They were in danger of collapsing. They were in danger of giving up in the Christian race. And in order to deal with this issue, in verses 1 through 3, he gives them commands to help them continue in the race. And the command really was essentially this: do not look at the difficulties around you. Rather, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Verse 3, consider him. In other words, they were not to be taken with the difficulties that surrounded them. Rather, they were to be taken a little bit higher. They were to survey, they were to have their eyes fixed firmly upon Jesus Christ. You see, collapse in the race is avoided by concentration in the race. Concentration upon Jesus Christ. Wonder tonight, could you maybe say that you're like these Hebrew converts? You're wearied. You're faint in the mind. The mind is discouraged. The mind, perhaps it feels as if it's about to collapse. Yes, you're in the Christian race and you've got off the starting line, but the finish line, it just seems so far away. And you just wonder, will you ever see the finish line? Will you ever continue in the race? And maybe you're like these believers and you're in danger of collapsing, or you feel as if you're about to collapse, or you're even thinking about just giving up, packing up your bags and leaving Jesus Christ altogether. Well, what is the antidote for your soul? It is to look to Christ. Like Paul set before these believers, it is simply to gaze upon, constantly look at Jesus Christ. Consider Christ. Consider him. Look at him. Constantly look at him. The one who never fainted. The one who never failed in the race. The one who continued in spite of all of the difficulty that he endured. It is to consider him and to look unto him. The one who started, the author, and the one who will finish, the finisher of your faith. And so here there are some commands to help you persevere in the race. And I just want to look at these commands in the verses 1 through 3 under the heading Commands to Persevere in the Race. I want you to think firstly with me about the command to confiscate. To confiscate. Verse 1, we read, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us." As I said already, these verses, they are vivid with imagery in the original text from the Athletic Games. The reference here to the great cloud of witnesses in verse 1. It has in your mind's eye the picture of the crowd in the arena. And the crowd, they are surrounding the arena where the games are going on. And what are they doing? They're looking at the athletes. They're looking at these athletes and they're cheering them on. They're encouraging them on in the race or in the game that they are involved in. Now the question is, who is this great cloud of witnesses? Who are these individuals that Paul drew attention to in order to encourage these struggling believers? Now there's been a lot of debate about this, but I think often the Bible is simple whenever we think. And when you think about the context here, you think of all that has just gone before in chapter 11. And there you have the great hall of faith. There you have the lives of great individuals like Moses, who endured seeing him who was invisible. Individuals like Abraham, who was a man of faith, who continued on in that long marathon that the Lord had set before him. So, I believe personally, here's Paul, he's writing to Jewish converts who are under pressure, who are under persecution. And he says to them this, there is a great cloud of witnesses. Or to put it in our language, there's a great crowd and they're watching you in the Christian race and they're cheering you on. Abraham, Moses, individuals like Isaac, individuals even like Rahab and other nameless individuals. And he said, look, as you struggle here on earth, there are individuals who have struggled before you and they're now gone on to glory. They're literally in the clouds and they are watching you. They're cheering you on. They're beckoning you on from the heavenly sidelines. And in seeking to spur them on after encouraging them that there was a great cloud of witnesses watching them, he then commands them to do something. He commands them to lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. And he's essentially saying this. He is saying, look, there are things And in the runner, as he goes to run the race, what does he do? Well, after he does his warm-up, he takes off his clothes, not all of his clothes, but most of his clothes to help him do the warm-up. And he just has the running vest, the shorts, whatever it might be today. He takes off those things that would be a hindrance to him if he was in the race. He takes them off and he ensures then that he can give his all, that he can run as fast as possible in that race. And Paul takes this imagery and he says to these believers, these Jewish converts under pressure, there are things and they're hampering you in your Christian life. They're like a weight and they're weighing you down and bearing you down, and the great cloud of witnesses, they see you and they see them. And yes, they're cheering you on, but they can also see these things being a hindrance to you in your Christian life. And so he's saying to them, look, you need to get rid of them. Just as the runner discards all of that extra clothing that he doesn't need before the race, so you are to remove, you are to discard the weight that does so easily beset you. Yes, in order to then continue, they were firstly to remove the hindrances that were keeping them from continuing. You see, in order for you to continue in the race, you must firstly cast off in the race. You must lay aside the sin that does so easily beset you. You are an individual. God has created you in his own image. But whilst you are an individual and you're fearfully and wonderfully made, yet there are certain sins and certain things that will plague you more than they will plague other people. Perhaps this evening, the thing that's holding you back from running the Christian race as you really want to is perhaps a pessimistic or a negative attitude that mars your thinking. Maybe perhaps for you tonight it's the sin of pride or anger. For some even it could be jealousy. You do not like to see others doing well in the race. Whatever it might be, the Lord's telling you this, that there's a great cloud of witnesses. That Abraham, Moses, Isaac, and others just like them, they see this. They see these things that are holding you back. Oh yes, they are, as it were, the heavenly agents. They're beckoning you on. They're saying, follow in our train, follow in our footsteps. And yet, they also see. They see these hindrances. And they're essentially saying, they're holding you back. And you've got to cast them off. Just as we perhaps met obstacles, met difficulties, and we, by God's grace, we removed them. We sought to put them away in our lives. So you are to cast them off because they're hindering you from looking at Jesus Christ implicitly and running the race as you would like. In the book of Philippians, Paul said in chapter 3, verse 13, this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before. And Paul here, he stated that if he was to press towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God, he firstly had to lay things aside. He had to forget those things which are behind. What were they? I believe personally, Paul was thinking here of those things that he did before he was saved. How he would have murdered Christians with his bare hands. Perhaps the imagery of him there as he guarded the clothing, the imagery of him watching Stephen being stoned, perhaps that imagery was still there in his mind. And he had to battle with it. He had to lay that aside. Those deep-dyed stains upon his conscience when he took individuals, women and children, and literally threw them into prison. Perhaps those things were on his mind. And yet he said to the believers here, we're to lay them aside, forgetting those things which are behind. We're then to reach forth for those things which are before. Again, writing to the church at Rome, he said in Romans 13, verse 12, the night is far spent, and the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. This phrase in the original, cast off the works of darkness, it was used of a man who had finished his day's work and was taking off his old work clothes. You know the dirty old work clothes that maybe the wife tells you have to leave at the door. Well, that's the thought here. And Paul here taking that imagery, he says that when they were to cast off those dirty rags, as it were, the works of darkness, and they were then to put on the armor of light. Wear or be clothed with the armor of light. You see, the addition of virtue will often firstly require the subtraction of vice, a leaving aside of the weight that easily besets you. What is it, child of God? What is it that come the beginning of this year? You said, Lord, I'm going to lay it aside. I'm going to, that hindrance, that weight that doth so easily beset me, I'm going to lay it aside this year. I'm going to cast it off as a work of darkness. I'm going to endeavor to be forward, to run in the Christian race. Whatever that thing is, child of God, the Lord's saying to you, cast it off, keep it away, because it's hindering you. It's hindering you in your walk with me. I once heard of a car mechanic who came to Christ. However, before he came to Christ, he was known in the community for having a very foul mouth. And after his conversion, at the beginning of his conversion, he still struggled with it. And so he came to his minister one day and he asked for advice. And the minister said, well, every time a profanity comes into your mind, sing a hymn instead. And the man did that. And the minister then called with him a week after he gave him that advice, just to see how he was getting on, called at the workshop that he was a mechanic at. He said, how are you getting on? He said, I'm getting on great, but I've run out of hymns in the hymn book. Oh, tonight, child of God, whatever it is that's holding you back, Paul is saying, if you want to run that Christian race, you're to lay it aside. You're to cast it off. Lay aside that which would hinder you in the Christian race. So there was the command to confiscate. I want you to see secondly here that there was also the command to continue. To continue. Verse 1, we read, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. In continuing to encourage these Hebrew converts who are being persecuted, Paul, he likened their walk and life to a race. Now the word race here, it is a word which really has the idea of a struggle or a contest. In the original text, it is the word which is used that we get our English word agony today. And Paul, in other words, he was saying this. He was saying, when you became a Christian, you entered into a life that was not easy. Rather, it is a race. It is a struggle. It is something that will bring pain. And then because it would bring pain and it is like a race, they were to run with patience the race that was set before them. Now the word patience here in the original, it really has the idea of endurance. The thought here is of both passive endurance, in other words, experiencing things, as well as active persistence, actually struggling physically and giving themselves to that active warring against the devil. And Paul here was saying that this race, the Christian life, what does it need? What does it require? It requires endurance. It requires patience. Yes, and until that race would be finished, they would continue, they would persevere, but there would always be hardships and obstacles, just like a race. And as well as being a fair-weather Christian, you're also to be a foul-weather Christian, to continue no matter the hardships. Tonight, remember this, believer. The Christian life's a race. It's a race. And races are not easy. Doesn't matter whether it's the 100-meter sprint, whether it's a triathlon, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter the race. The race is not easy. There will be pain. There will be difficulty. There will be preparation. There will be training. And in the Christian race, at times there will need to be agony and heartbreak. For you to reach the end, for you to reach the finish line, it's going to require endurance and patience. And at times you will have to passively endure things. And other times you'll have to actually and actively persist and pursue things. Grapple with the Lord, battle with sin, wrestle in prayer, but you're still to continue and endure. You're to run with patience. You're not merely to start off at a frenetic pace and then slow up. Rather, it requires patience, endurance, steady, the same pace throughout your Christian life. Speaking of the seed that fell in good ground and likening it to the believer, Christ, he then said in Luke 8, verse 15, "But that on the good ground are they, which in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience." And he reminded them that when you become a believer, what happens is the seed of the word of God, it gets buried deep down in the soil of your heart. And it then takes time to germinate. But whenever it does germinate, and then there is the plant that begins to grow, it may take time, but eventually there would be fruit. And he said here that the fruit would be brought forth with patience. Again, speaking of the destruction of Jerusalem, and then the impending wars and tribulation that would come upon the people of God, Christ said in Luke 21, verse 19, "In patience possess ye your souls." And he said there would be a time that would come when you would hear of wars, and you would hear of rumors of wars, and you would hear of difficulty. But it would require patience. It would require endurance. In spite of all of those things, he was saying to his people there, his disciples, you're to possess your souls with endurance, with hardship. The race of the believer, it is not a 100-meter sprint. Rather, it is a marathon or a triathlon. And you are to continue this race with patience. Last week at the Minister's Week of Prayer, I was talking to one of our old godly retired ministers. Not mention him, not embarrass him. But he was just asking me, "Well, how are you getting on? You're in ministry a few years now. How are you finding it?" And I said, "Well, generally, yes, very good. The Lord's blessing us. I'm very encouraged." And then we talked a little bit more. And he said, "You know, brother, the Christian life and the Christian ministry, I found it was a lot like a game of tennis." I said to him, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And he said to me, "A game of tennis, when you think of the game of tennis, you just keep batting. Just keep batting." And he said, "You just keep serving." And that's really, when you think about it, that's really what the Christian life is like. Sometimes you'll have to actively serve. You'll have to actually actively persist and pursue. You will have to storm the kingdom of Satan. Sometimes you'll have to grapple with your own sins. And there'll be other times where, like the tennis player, you'll have to bat away the fiery darts of the wicked one. You'll have to bat away the trials that will come upon you. But like the tennis player, keep batting. Keep serving. The amazing thing about a game of tennis is that in spite of the amount of sets that keep going and going and going, the tennis player, they continue on at the same pace. I think it's fascinating. You watch one of those games where it comes to three sets and then there's the tiebreaker at the end. Very, very long, long game. And the Christian life is just like that. Keep batting. Keep serving. Keep running the race with patience. So there is the command here to confiscate, the command to continue. I want you to see thirdly here, there is then the command to concentrate. To concentrate. Verse 2, we read, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Looking unto Jesus. Whenever you read that, it just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? But you should always keep in mind that whenever a name is used of God or Christ, there's always a reason. For example, when you often read through the Gospel of John, you will often find Christ called not the Son of Man, but rather the Son of God. The reason that John does that is to emphasize the deity of Christ, that he indeed was God. And here, Paul writing to these Hebrew converts, he could have said, "Looking unto Christ." the anointed one, the Messiah. He could have said, looking unto any one of the names of Christ that are given in the Bible. But he simply said, looking unto Jesus. Now, why is that important? And why do I underline that for you tonight? Well, you think of Jesus, the name Jesus. It was the name that the angel Gabriel gave to Mary to tell her to call the Son of God, Jesus. And yes, it means Savior. It comes from the Hebrew Joshua, has that idea of a rescuer, of a deliverer, of a Savior. But the name Jesus is simply the humane name of Christ. Now, Paul here, writing to Hebrew converts, these Jewish Christians that were under pressure, in calling him simply Jesus, whilst he's not getting away from the fact that Christ was God, he's already established that in the book of Hebrews up to this point, the fact that he was the high priest and so on. But here he just simply calls him Jesus. What is he saying? He's saying this, looking unto Jesus. In other words, looking unto the fact that he, whilst he was God, he lived as a man. Whilst he was a man, he saw the race that was before him. He saw the cross that was before him. And yet he patiently endured and he finished that race. He was shamed, yes. And now he has his race finished, so to speak, because now he, as in verse 2 it says, now he is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And so in saying, looking unto Jesus, he was saying this, look unto him who endured difficulty in his earthly life. Look unto him who endured the difficulty of the cross. And when you think about that, and you think of the last week of Jesus Christ, the fact that he was omniscient and knew all things, he knew. He knew that as he was passing through Jericho, what was going to happen to him. As he came to Jerusalem. And yes, he entered Jerusalem with great aplomb and with great acclamation. And yes, the people, they laid the palm trees down. Oh, they treated him like a king. But Jesus Christ knew that just a few days later, he would be despitefully treated. He would be shamed. He would be spat upon. He would be mocked and he would be despised. He knew all that. He knew the race. He knew the finish line that was in view. And so in telling these Hebrew converts, looking unto Jesus, that phrase looking, or that word looking, it's in the continuous tense. And it has the idea of constantly looking at him, constantly gazing at him, constantly looking at the one who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. You see, whilst continuance requires confiscation of sin, it also requires a concentration on the Savior, a continual looking unto Jesus. And tonight, maybe you're struggling in the race. Maybe you're on the verge of collapse. What is Paul saying to you tonight? He's saying this, looking unto Jesus. Keep your eyes on him. Put your eyes on him. Look unto the one who ran the race and reached the finish line and did it with joy. He did it with joy. Who for the joy that was set before him? What a mind-boggling statement in Scripture. He saw all that was before him, and yet he counted it a great joy to die for you, believer. To die for you in your guilty room instead. He seen it as a great joy that was brought to him. And so if you're weary, and you feel as if you're on the verge of collapse, and maybe 2018 has brought its struggles, and you've entered 2019 almost just dragging your heels, spiritually speaking, kicking your heels. What is the Lord saying to you tonight? He's saying this. You get your eyes on Jesus Christ. You look onto the one who endured tremendous suffering and knew it was all coming, and yet he reached the finish line anyway. And you don't take your eyes off him. That's what it means, looking, a continual look, a constant gaze. Indeed, in Psalm 16, we read in verse 8, I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. And here's David. And yes, David at times said, my sin is ever before me. He was always faced with a sin. But here he's saying in this wonderful psalm, the Lord's always before me. I've set the Lord before me. And because he is at my right hand, I'll not be moved. I'll not be moved. The things that I experience, the trials that I will meet as king, I'll not be moved. Why? Because the Lord set before me. Because I have him constantly before me, constantly before my face. Whilst you're to look away from this world, you're also to look onto the coming. You're to look unto Jesus and continue to do so. O child of God tonight, where's your gaze? Where is your gaze? Can you say you're looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith, the one who started it, just as an author writes a book, he starts it, and the one who also will complete it someday, the finisher. Are you looking unto him? And are you having your eyes on him? This is the key to success in the Christian life, to keep your eye fixed on him. And I wonder, is it there? I wonder, is it there tonight? Is your eye set firmly upon Jesus Christ and not moving? Dr. Charles Stanley is a very, very encouraging man. I would encourage you to read his books and to listen to him, a well-known preacher in America. But you know, on one occasion when he was young in the ministry, he was discouraged. And when he was discouraged, he was doing his rounds, visiting people. And he called in with an old godly saint that he had an awful lot of time for. As he knocked on the door and exchanged small talk, this godly lady, she discerned that he was extremely discouraged. Said to him, "Charles, come into my house." And after a little while, she said, "Charles, I have something to show you." She brought Charles Stanley into a little back room at the back of her house. And she showed him a picture on the wall. The picture was a depiction of Daniel in the lion's den. And in this depiction, there was Daniel there, and there was these lions that were very close to him, and they were surrounded. He was actually in the middle, and the lions were encircled around him. And Charles Stanley looked at the picture. He said, "Why did you show me this picture?" And she said, "Look at the picture carefully." And so he did. He said, "Oh, I see what you want me to see. Look at the lions, how close they are to Daniel." And he said, no, you've got it all wrong. Don't look at the lions, look at Daniel." So he looked at Daniel. And he said, "Yes, I see Daniel. Daniel, he's encircled by lions." And he said, no, look at Daniel closely. And in this picture, here's Daniel, and Daniel is surrounded by these lions, as I have said, but he's not focused on the lions. In this picture, Daniel, he's looking up, and there's a great smile on his face. And she said to him, "The problem with you, Charles, is that your eye is on the lions when it should be on the Lord like Daniel." And oh, child of God, this is the key to continuing in the Christian life. Although the lions might encircle you, and the roaring lion you feel might be encircling you this very moment, and perhaps even this very week. But, like that picture, looking unto Jesus, look at him, and keep looking at him, and don't take your eyes off him. So there was the command to confiscate and continue and concentrate. Lastly and quickly, I want you to see the command to consider. Verse 3, we read, "For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." In the context, Paul has told the Hebrew believers to run the race with patience. And he's also told the believers to continue to look at Jesus. And verse 3 is really him just restating the truth of verse 2. As already said, he is saying here that they were to consider him. They were to contemplate him. The picture here, "lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds," the picture is of a runner collapsing in the race. What he's saying is this, he's just re-emphasizing this truth. It's continue to look to Christ. It is continue to consider him who endured such contradiction of sinners. Consider him, keep your eye on him. Otherwise, you're going to collapse. You're going to be wearied and faint in your minds. You see, without consideration and contemplation, there will then subsequently be a collapse, a blowout in the race. Maybe you can look at this past year, 2018. You can say there's been a blowout at times. Times I haven't been what I should have been. times I've collapsed. Like the runner in the steeplechase, I've come to that obstacle and I felt perhaps that I couldn't hurdle that obstacle and I'm just stuck there at this obstacle. Well, what's the antidote? Consider him. Looking unto Jesus. And if you don't, then unfortunately, the Lord is reminding you tonight that it's either concentrate or collapse. Consider him, or else blow out. This is the key to continuing in the race. Commands for continuing in the race. May the Lord encourage you by his word this evening.